know, music does something for us that maybe some other things don't. Music helps us remember stories, remember facts, remember random names, and maybe even gets us to remember truths about things, because there's some kind of tune that goes along with it. Well, our Bible is full of songs. On Wednesday night, we've been going through the Psalms, and we've been looking at several of them. The problem is, we don't have any music to go along with many of them. So it's like we kind of have to imagine what the music would be. And many of our songs in our songbook come from the Psalms, and we've just kind of written our own music to them. But imagine for a second that we are all Jews living in David's time, per se. And we have people singing songs about what God has done and the victory that God has done. And maybe it's some real event that happened years and years ago, maybe even hundreds of years ago. And we can remember vividly what happened because of the song. I was trying to think of a modern song that might tell us some event that happened previously. And we know what happened, not because we've read it in some book somewhere, but because we've heard about it in some song. And maybe you've got some event in your life that you can relate to in that. But that's a lot of what these songs are, is they would have been things that you heard growing up and as a kid that would have been telling you about what the Lord did. Well, in Judges chapter 5, we have the Song of Deborah. And it tells us a little more detail of the story that is given in chapter 4. It gives it in this very poetic way, of which we will look at. But we need to remind ourselves of the story in Judges chapter 4. Now, let's go back and let's think about our time of the Judges. The time of the Judges is kind of described in several different ways. It was a time of cycle for Israel, where they would do good, then they would forsake God, and they would serve these idols. God would send an oppressor on them that would persecute them and would steal from them or would tax them and would do all kinds of things. And the people would finally get fed up with it. They would cry out to God for help. They would turn from their idols, and God would send a deliverer, who we call a judge, to the people. And then they would have peace for a while. And then the next thing you know, they've departed back to serve these other gods, and we go back through our process again. And they weren't one unified nation. They were tribes, and they were spread apart. We wouldn't say that they were united in any way, because there wasn't what reigning over them. There wasn't a king reigning over them. God was their king, but yet there was no king that was reigning over them at this time. And so there was no like central army that said, hey, everybody come down. It would be the judge would have to rouse up his own army. We're going to see that come into play a little bit here in this particular story. Well, in the time of Deborah, Deborah would be our only female deliverer, our only female judge. And she lived in a circuit in Ramah, between Ramah and Bethel. And that's a place very similar to where Samuel was at, the most common of the judges, the last one to go. And she would have gone between these two places. And it seems almost weird that a woman would be the deliverer, wouldn't it? But the story of Deborah is all about how the Lord delivers the enemy through a woman. And it's not even really through Deborah, which is an interesting thing when we think about it. All right, and we'll talk more about that when we get into the actual song. But we have this time of Deborah, and as Ed read for us, there's this king of Hazor by the name of Jabin who is pressing the people, and he is cruel, as you see in chapter 4 and verse 3. But I want you to see what kind of army he has. He has 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the people cruelly. Now, you remember, those of you who are in the Wednesday night class, just a few weeks ago, we looked at Psalm 20. And remember where David said, some trust in horses and some chariots, but we in the Lord.
This would have been a scary thing to go up against 900 chariots of iron. And that's what he has. And they cry, and the people do get delivered, and that would be Deborah, and they would come to her for judgment. Well, here's what the story goes. The story goes that Barak, he comes down, and he is going to be the leader of the army of Israel, if we want to say that. And notice beginning of verse 6 what Deborah did. She sent and she summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kadesh Naphtali. And we'll talk about where that is. That's up near the Sea of Galilee, near Nazareth, in that area. Sends for him up there. And she says, "Has not the Lord, God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun?" And I'll draw out Sisera, who was the leader of Jabin's army. Barak had been told to do this, but it seems like Barak did not want to go to Mount Tabor, which was very close to his town, to go to this battle. And he sends word back to Deborah, you remember, "If you'll go with me, I'll go." And Deborah goes with him up to Kadesh, to which they will have it. When she gets there, notice what she tells Barak down in verse 9. She said, "Surely I'll go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." And I bet he's thinking, okay, Deborah's going to get the glory. That's fine. The judge is going to get it. We're going to find out it wasn't Deborah who gets the glory, is it? It is another woman by the name of Jael. And so she rose and they went. And they go and they have this battle. And notice how many men he has with him. Verse 10. 10,000 men went up with him at his heels, and Deborah went with him. Now, how many chariots of iron did they have? 900, right? That wouldn't have been the only ones that they would have had coming to fight, but they had 900 chariots of iron, which is a substantial army, versus 10,000. Very tiny when it comes to an army. And so they go, they have this battle, they go to Mount Tabor, and the Lord routs them. Notice this in verse 15. The Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and he fled away on foot. He's now abandoned his tank and he has run away. And he goes this far at this place in verse 14 to Horash Hagagim, however you say that. I don't know how you say it. Doesn't matter. He goes to a long way away, about as far away as he can get. And they all fail, every man of them. So he gets to this tent, and there's somebody that he knows at this tent. He's got cahoots with him, right? And he says, she says, "Come in, come in." So he comes in, right? And he's tired. He's been in battle. He's just run on foot to get away from being in the battle. Have you ever done that? No. You know how far I've run. You know how tired I am after I run? I'm very tired. I can't imagine I've just been in battle before having to run a great distance on foot without food, water, somebody chasing after me. I'm not just jogging. I'm going as fast as I can to get to a safe place. And so remember, he goes in the tent and says, "Oh, I'm tired." But he asks for water, doesn't he? He asks for water because he's been on the road. And what does the woman Jael give him? She gives him milk. What do you take at night if you want to go to sleep? You may take a glass of warm milk. They had refrigerators back then in the tents. Probably was some warm milk. Takes this milk, and what does he do? He falls asleep, and she covers him with a blanket. Doesn't want him to get up. Doesn't want him to get cold. Puts it in. And by the way, she's already told him, "If anybody comes, I won't say that you're here. Nobody's here." And that was at his request. But she walks back into the tent, seeing that he's sound asleep. And you remember what she does? I want you to read it, how the text tells us. Verse 20, or verse 21. Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg and a hammer in her hand. And she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. We might describe that as brutal and cruel and disgusting. And the Bible describes that as victory. That's interesting to me. She goes in softly. Why does she have to do it that way? I don't know. I've often wondered about that. And I've often wondered the picture of her coming back into the tent with this tent peg in her hand. You've seen movies and TV shows, right, where somebody's got the gun. And they're trying to decide if they should pull the trigger or not. They've got it and they're out of it. I wonder if her hand was shaking when she did that. Or if she was so determined to take down this enemy of the Lord that she just drove her hand straight through. And she went out and told everybody, "I got the guy you're looking for." Well, the victory is given. And notice who gets the credit, verse 23. On that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. This is not Jael's battle. This is not Barak's battle. This is not Deborah's battle. This is God's battle. And the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Jabin, the king. Now, we know this story. That's a pretty good victory. I'm here to tell you, I learned some things this time going through the Song of Deborah about this story that I had never really pictured, never really thought about before. When I thought about the Song of Deborah, I've always thought about how the song concludes. Picturing her walking in and striking him with the hammer, then picturing the mother of Sisera looking out the window saying, "When is he coming home?" I've missed a lot in the song because I've always focused on that. Tonight I want us to see some details that we're not given in chapter 4, but through song, through poem, we can picture what life was really like before God gave them this great victory. Now here's the very simple thing we're going to do about the Song of Deborah. We're just going to outline this very simply. I want you to look in verses 1 through 3. About how this song, after the victory, is about blessing the Lord. It's about praising the Lord. And I want us to read verses 1 through 3, and we'll see why. Then Deborah sang, and Barak the son of Abinoam on that day. The leaders took the lead in Israel. The people offered themselves willingly. Bless the Lord. Hear, O kings, give ear, O princes, to the Lord I will sing. I'll make mute melody to the Lord, the God of Israel. What's her reasoning for blessing the Lord? Verse 2, the leaders led and the people willingly offered themselves. You might say, the people did their job. Those who were supposed to lead the army, they led the people. And the soldiers offered themselves willingly. They weren't forced to go into this battle. They weren't coerced to go in. They willingly offered themselves. And isn't it a beautiful thing when people do what they're supposed to do? When you're given a task or you're given a job and you actually do that, don't things work better that way? We're going to find out why maybe she starts off this way, because I think we're going to see the people hadn't been like this. They had not been taking the lead. They had not been offering themselves, but yet they had been holding back. The leaders led, or the strong showed strength, some of your translations may say. They did what they were supposed to do. But notice also in verse 3 who she addresses. Hear, O king. Now, who's not around in Deborah's day? Kings aren't around in Deborah's day. Who might she be talking to? I'm here to tell you that I think it's the kings of the earth, the kings of Canaan, those that are coming to oppress them, as she concludes, And I want you to think about what Psalm 2 says, those of us who were just in that Psalms class. The kings of the earth have gathered against the Lord and against His Christ. The kings were coming to battle and they were pressing against who? The Lord's people. Which gets us to another reason of why He wanted to bless the Lord, is because the Lord had made a covenant with the people. Notice this in verses 4 and 5, where you won't see the word covenant listed, but I think she alludes back to this verse 4. Lord, when you went out from Seir, that would be the region of Edom, when you marched from the region of Edom, the earth trembled, the heavens dropped, and yes, the clouds dropped water, and the mountains quaked before the Lord, even Sinai before the Lord, the God of Israel. When did all of that take place? When they were coming out of wandering in the wilderness, passing through Edom, they come to Mount Sinai for what purpose? Or I should say, before they ever wander in the wilderness. To get the law at Mount Sinai, right? You remember you got the fire and the smoke and all that stuff going on. And what did the Lord say? I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And Deborah is saying, the Lord had made a covenant. I remember what it was like. And the earth trembled. Kings, you better watch out. The earth trembled when the Lord came and made this covenant with His people. You better watch out. And God has kept His covenant with His people. But that's not the way it was in modern Israel. I want you to see the picture that Deborah paints of modern day Israel before and after this great victory. I want you to begin here in verse 6. In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, that would be the judge right before, who we get one verse about at the end of chapter 3. How did the people do? In the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned, and travelers kept to the byways, and the villagers ceased in Israel. And they ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as mother in Israel. And when new gods were chosen, then war was in the gates. And was shield or spear to be seen among 40,000 in Israel? Oh, my heart goes out to the commanders of Israel, who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless the Lord. What was life like in modern Israel before victory? You remember what it was like back in April? I guess it was last year. April of 2013. The city of Boston, after the Boston Marathon bombing. And then the next day, they are looking for whatever his name is, the terrorist who had set the bombs off. And they put Boston down on lockdown. I imagine most of us had looked at that TV screen to see some of that, didn't we? How eerie a feeling was it to see bustling Boston with nobody outside? That is the way Israel is described in the days of Jabin. Notice that in verse 6. The highways were abandoned. People weren't going. They weren't using the roads. And so if they were, they were going on the byways. They weren't going in where everybody else was. They were going out on the outskirts of town. In verse 7, the villagers ceased in Israel. It wasn't safe for people just to be out on the farms, out in the countryside. They had all gathered up kind of in fortified cities because Jabin pressed so hard. Why was that? Well, verse 8. When new gods were chosen, then war was in the gates. The reason it was so hard is because they had forsaken God and they were serving these other gods. And every time that happened, war came at the gates and the process would start all over again. Until who arose? I, Deborah, when they called to seek for help. I arose, and notice this, was shield or spear to be seen among 40,000 in Israel. When war came to the gates of the city, what didn't happen? Israel couldn't even muster anybody to go fight. What cowards. That's what sin does. It turns us into cowards. We don't want to fight for God anymore. We don't want to take a stand for God anymore. And so we all huddle up and we get with people who are also scared to death and we don't do anything. And I tell you what, that can happen with us. And he's going to list in just a second people who helped and people who didn't. And it is not good for those who didn't help. But I want you to see how he says it again. My heart goes out to the leaders who led and to the people who offered themselves willingly. There were some who were willing to muster. It wasn't 40,000, was it? How many went? 10,000 went. A quarter went. Well, so he blesses the Lord. I want you to see after victory, verse 10. So tell of it, speak, you who, and the idea would be, now ride on donkeys, who sit on rich carpets, and you who walk by the way. Before, what had they done with the highways? They had abandoned them, and there was no one coming through. They had given them up. But now they are riding, they're now on the highways, and they're on these donkeys, and they have nice carpets, they have nice saddles, we might say. And then verse 10. What's being played? To the sound of music at the watering places. There they repeat the righteous triumphs of the Lord, the righteous triumphs of His villagers in Israel. Where did the people get their water from? They got running water in their house? They had to go out to the wells to get the water, didn't they? Well, where do you think the enemy is going to go, and what do you think the enemy is going to try to plug up and stop when he first comes into a city? He's going to go to the watering places. And so you think they've had any guts to go to the watering places all this time? But what are they doing now? They've got musicians at the watering places. It's now okay to go get water. But before, they didn't get out on the road and they didn't go get their water without some kind of probably a fight. And here they are, they can now go in peace. Well, that's modern day Israel. There's now peace, it wasn't before. They were terrified, now they have joy and peace. Well, why is that? That's because of the battle. And she would tell us about the battle. And I want you to see about those who helped and those who didn't. Let's read starting in verse 13, verse 12. Awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, break out in songs like she can't help but sing about this great victory of the Lord. Arise, Barak. Lead away your captives, O son of Ahinoam. You just won. Go bring everyone back. Bring the captives back. Why? Because then marched the remnant of the noble. And the people of the Lord marched down against the mighty. They were willing to go. Come bring back the spoils. Now where did they come from? Look at verse 14. From Ephraim, their root, they marched down to the valley. So where is Ephraim at? Ephraim is down near the middle, the southern middle. Ephraim came for war. They came and they marched down the valley. Following you, Benjamin, with your kinsmen. So Benjamin comes along with Ephraim. They come to this battle. And notice, from Maker marched down the commanders. Well, where's Maker? Maker was the eldest son of Manasseh. And so I think that is the area that is being referred to, is the area of Manasseh. They came to help. And from Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant's staff. So Zebulun comes, and Zebulun is represented at this war. And in verse 15, the princes of Issachar came. Where is Issachar? It's right there. You see, we're working our way up to the battlefield. And then who else? Well, Reuben. searchings or great ponderings of heart. You know what? Reuben really thought about it. Reuben really considered whether or not they should come to battle. Why did you sit still among the sheepfolds? To hear the whistling of the flocks? Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. But what did they do? They stayed at home. They wanted to, but they stayed at home. What about Gilead? Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan. Well, who's Gilead? Oftentimes that's referred to as Gad and Manasseh. They stayed at home too. He doesn't even give a reason why they stayed at home. Notice the second group. Dan, why did you stay at home? With the ships. They've got a seaport. Somebody's got to man the ships coming in from the Mediterranean. Or Asher, you sat still at the coast of the sea, staying by its landing. You did the same thing. Why didn't you come? Got to guard the ships. They didn't come. But notice verse 18, what it says of Zebulun. Zebulun is a people who risk their lives to the death. And Naphtali too, on the heights of the field. They were willing to give themselves up for the Lord. Reuben just thought about it. Well, what does he have to say about that? Why don't you go down to verse 23 as he continues this. He says, curse Meraz, a city right outside of the place where the battle took place at Mount Tabor. Curse Meraz, says the angel of the Lord. Curse its inhabitants thoroughly because they did not come to the help of the Lord, the help of the Lord against the mighty. They had it easier. They're right outside, and I don't remember if I've got the picture up. I don't. I couldn't remember if I had a picture of Meraz or not. They shouldn't come. They weren't willing. Fine. But those who did get great praise. So verse 19, we have the fight coming. And it tells us about how the army was defeated. The kings came. They fought. And they fought the kings of Canaan. And I'm interested, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I think the kings came from various places. At Taanach, by the waters of Megiddo, and they got no spoils of silver. The Canaanites came away with nothing. But from heaven the stars fought, and their courses, they fought against Sisera. I think it's saying God fought against Sisera. God had a hand fighting against Sisera, because, notice verse 21, the torrent Kishon swept them away, the ancient torrent. The torrent Kishon, march on, my soul, with might. What I think we have happening here is God drew the people out with Barak and his army, and they got them to this place, this Kishon River. There's Mount Tabor, the place where they were to draw them from. Then you have the Kishon River. It flows down here from Gilboa all the way up to one of those cities. And what I think happened is they drew them to the river. God sent rain down, just like, remember that's what he said when he came through Edom. He sent rain down from the sky. He sent rain down from heaven, and the floods came and caused the problem for Sisera and his army. And that is how they were routed, and the people then fought against him. Jabin, or Sisera, fled on foot. But what you have, the Lord did this. So then the loud beat of the horse hoofs with the galloping and the galloping of his steeds, and they're trying to run away, get away as far as they can. And Meraz, you didn't do anything. Cursed be Meraz and all its inhabitants because it did not come to the help of the Lord. And so we have not only the defeat of the army, but we have the defeat of Sisera. Most blessed among women be Jael, the woman who gets the glory, the wife of Heber the Kenite, of tent-dwelling women, most blessed. He asked water, and she gave him milk.
She brought him curds and a noble's bowl. Brought him the best thing she had. She sent her hand to the tent peg and her right hand to the workman's mallet. And she struck Sisera. She crushed his head. She shattered and pierced his temple. And between her feet, he sank. He fell. He lay still. Between her feet, he sank. He fell. And where he fell, or where he sank, there he fell, dead. See how that would have built into some crescendo? He fell dead. And out of the window, she peered. And I think this is the lesson. I think this is what the song is about, that is to teach the kings about what the Lord does. So out of the window, she peered. Who? The mother of Sisera wailed through the lattice. Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the hoofbeats of the chariots? Her wisest princess answer, indeed, she answers herself. You ever felt that way? You know the answer to the question that you just asked? Why isn't my child here? Something's wrong. She not only, she answers herself. And what does she? Tries to make herself feel better by saying, have they not found and divided the spoil? A womb or two for every man? Spoiled of dyed materials for Sisera? What's spoiled of dyed materials embroidered? Were two pieces of dyed work embroidered for the neck as spoil? No. So may all your enemies perish, O Lord. But your friends be like the sun as he rises in his might. What's everyone supposed to get out of this? If you are against the Lord and you don't come help the Lord, may you have a tent peg drilled through your head by some woman. How degrading would that be if you're a king? Remember, wasn't there another judge who a woman threw a rock out of the window and killed him? And he didn't want to be known as the guy who got killed by a woman. So he said to his armor bearer, please draw your sword on me so I'm not killed by a woman. God says, if you don't come and help me, may a tent peg be driven in your head by a woman who's not even a warrior. You talk about utter shame. Well, the question we have to ask ourselves is, am I doing that? Because as we see, when they turned away from God and they went after these new gods, life was hard for them. And they were scared. They couldn't live their life the way they wanted to, because they're always looking over their shoulder to see what was going to happen. And that's the way it's supposed to be when we're opposed to God. Life isn't supposed to be easy. Life isn't supposed to be a cakewalk. Because God stands against us. And when we gather against Him and against His Christ our Lord, we don't stand a chance. Kiss the Son, right? Psalm 2. Unless He become angry with you. Did God get angry, finally enough, with the people of Canaan? Yeah, to the point where they utterly destroyed them. Life is not supposed to be that way. And it doesn't have to be that way. The people didn't have to do that. You and I don't have to do that. Secondly, the way that we see it is some are willing to come to the help of God, and some just aren't. Some have really great intentions, like Reuben. They have great wanderings and great ponderings and searchings of heart. Man, I really need to do better. I really need to take this stand. And they sit back and they keep doing the same thing they were doing. Which side of the spectrum does that fall on? falls on the enemies of the Lord. Because what happened is the people were called to battle. And not everyone came. 10,000 came. The rest stayed at home. And so, it's a beautiful thing when the leaders lead and the people willingly offer themselves. When the commanders do their job and when you and I do our jobs as Christians, it is a beautiful thing the way the body of Christ works. But when we don't do our jobs, it is a mess. And bless the Lord when we do our jobs, because He gave us our jobs. That's what they did. Bless the Lord. And secondly, when was the last time you risked your life for God? Now granted, we live in a different day and a different age where we don't have physical battles. But the New Testament talks about how Aquila and Priscilla risked their lives for the sake of Paul. I think sometimes it would be easy for us to risk our life for our family. We'd say, yeah, if the bullet is coming, shoot me. But if that bullet is for God or for Christ, we might be a little more reluctant to just jump in and take that bullet. Maybe that's because we're more committed to our family, we're serving our family, or we're serving our kids, more than we want to serve our Lord, as we talked about this morning. They're more important. I think we should jump in take the bullet for the family. But you stood up for them last time somebody talked bad about your family, didn't you? When was the last time I stood up because somebody was talking about God or about His people? I'll tell you what I do. I do just like Israel. I humble up with other people who are scared to fight, and I stick with them. My friend or my enemy? Am I risking it? And then thirdly and finally, things don't always go as we expect them to go. Jabin came with Sisera thinking they were going to wipe the floor with Israel. Isn't that what the mother was saying? They came to get their spoil. They came with their 900 chariots of iron. But some do trust in their horses and in their chariots. But we trust in the Lord. And who came away with the spoil? The guy who didn't even want to go to battle to begin with. Barak, the guy who was scared to go, even though the Lord had told him to go, and He had delivered the people into their hands. And isn't that what God has told us? If God is for us, who can be against us? And yet we're terrified. We're scared to death. And so the glory doesn't go to the people that we often think it's going to go to. It goes to those tiny little people that don't make a big scene, that don't say all this stuff, but they take care of business. They came from somebody you would never have expected. But yet the people that you would have expected to take a stand, Miraz right next to it, nope. Asher didn't have to go very far, nope. Dan, nope. They don't take a stand. And the leader of the army didn't. And that's why he doesn't get the credit. That's why we're talking bad about Barak. It's good that he finally went. It's good that he stuck to the game plan. And sometimes we need friends and people to prod us, to say, do the right thing. You know what to do. How much easier is it to do when we trust God on our own? Go and fight. Read it one more time of how it all ends. So may all your enemies perish, O Lord, but your friends be like the sun as he rises in his might. As the sun comes up in the day, does the sun get stronger or does it get weaker? It gets stronger and brighter and brighter and brighter. He says, that's what you'll be if you're a friend of the Lord. You'll get brighter and brighter, mightier and mightier.
Let's not be a people who forsake God. Let's not be a people who don't stand up for God. Let's be a people who serve Him and risk our lives for Him rather than expecting everybody else to take care of Him. You're subject to the invitation anyway. We'd ask you to come now. We stand as we sing.